VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Welcome to the VanWee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3 The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Now here are your hosts of the VanWee Financial Hour, Stephen and Adam VanWee.
Saturday came early this week. At least it seemed like it did. Weren't we just here about 3 days ago?
I think it was a little longer.
Maybe. Anyway, it is Saturday morning. It is Northeast Florida. This is the VanWee Financial Hour, and I am Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we're going to introduce some topics today and do all sorts of other things after this. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning.
Steve, you went right to the head of the line because those are the rules.
Yes. I'd like to know more about Bitcoins. Concept and how they're used or whatever.
I have a resident expert to my left front. I'm just going to let him take that then because he's been right. Studying it real hard.
I have, and I am far, far from a resident expert.
It's all relative.
I'm not an expert in any description of the word, but yeah, I have been doing a lot of research on it, and I have a whole piece prepared on it later. It mainly has to do with the technology behind Bitcoin. Last week, if you were listening, I talked about cryptocurrencies and specifically Bitcoin and what they were used for and why there was such a big hype around it. It is dominating the news right now. You really can't turn on the TV or open up any news site without seeing at least one article related to
Bitcoin. How many clients this week asked us about it?
Within the past 2 weeks, at least five.
Yeah. And that was more in regard to should we invest in it or not.
Yeah. And basically my conclusion last week that it's not really an investment. It is a very much speculation right now about how much these things are worth. And there's definitely some major risks associated with it. Anything that can go up 1,000% in a few years can drop equally as fast, if not faster.
Probably more like a few days.
But I do think that there is a real use for the technology. It is a form of digital cash, and it's somewhat untraceable. So it's very appealing to a lot of people because of that. A lot of people feel like their digital lives are being tracked and monitored by governments and companies and all sorts of people, and this is a way around that. So in that regard, it's very intriguing, and I think there's a place for it in the world. It just isn't necessarily an investment.
I got a couple of questions too. Like, one of them is, why the meteoric rise? What's it based on?
Popularity, speculation, people seeing other people become millionaires by buying $100 worth of Bitcoin 5 years ago. There's just all sorts of reasons why it's happening. And the funny thing was, one of the more popular Bitcoin digital wallet providers has more accounts open than Charles Schwab does.
and another question, I guess, is, what is it?
It's digital currency.
What's it backed by?
Actually backed by the technology behind it, which is sort of a peer-to-peer agreement between all the users that, yes, this does exist, and yes, it is worth this. Mm. It's very, very interesting, and I'll go through that whole thing later about what it is backed by, and that is where the real exciting opportunities are.
So, Jack, are you still confused like I am?
Yes.
I'm not surprised.
Well, I got a little clearer picture of it.
So am I.
I just want to know where they came from and what they were.
I will talk about that. I will definitely talk about that later.
Probably right after the bottom of the hour break, Adam will get into a little bit more about it. But the major question that we've been asked this week has a simple answer to me, and that question is, should I invest in it? And my answer is no.
Yeah. If you had bought, I think on Thursday at $17,000, you'd be down about over $1,000 right now because it's in the 15,000s.
Well, I should restate that. Yes, buy it. But buy it about 6 months ago. Yeah, if you can figure out how to do that, you let me know.
You should have done it earlier.
Yeah, but I'm afraid that, like so many things, people who are in it already and have been riding it up will fail to sell it.
Yeah, circa the NASDAQ in 2000.
Or gold and silver. If you've been riding the gold and silver wave for the last 20 or 30 years and never selling it, you've missed a great opportunity. And I think right now, you're going to see this turn into a sell rather than a buy. If you're interested in speculating, speculate that it might be toward the top, and if you own any, get rid of it. That's what I would do.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of conservative that way.
Interestingly, there's two Bitcoin futures ETFs coming out this weekend. Actually, they just got regulatory approval.
They're long and short?
I haven't researched them tremendously because they're not even available yet, but next week I may talk about that as well.
So I'm sorry if we didn't enlighten your body of knowledge about it very much, because there's really some complicated.
You have some, anyway.
Yeah, well, like I said, Adam will do a piece on it right after the bottom of the hour that we'll get into a little bit more depth about, I guess, the concept in general, and really the part that excites us, which is the technology behind it, which can probably have applications far and wide, and maybe worth looking into. The developers of that type of software might have a really bright future.
Well, that's one of the funny things, is there's all this mystery surrounding the actual developer or developers of Bitcoin. They don't even know who it is, really. There's a name, but they don't know if it's a group or a person or where it came from. It's all very mysterious, which I think adds to the intrigue and the appeal.
But if you think things like precious metals and other commodities are risky, this makes them look tame by a lot. It's that risky.
Okay, I think you've given me a lot more than I already had.
Well, that's a good start. Keep listening.
It's been a big help.
Well, we certainly appreciate the call, and you have a great day. Stay warm.
All right.
Be good. Thanks. It's not much of a nice day out there, is it?
It's pretty ugly.
Yeah. Even when your dog won't go outside, it's bad.
Well, at least the rain seems to have subsided a little bit.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we had another very interesting week in the market. Well, first off, let's welcome everybody, because we did exactly what we always tell you we'll do. For the regulars, thanks for being here once again. You're the reason we do this every week. And again, we are live. Most other shows are not live. So if you would like to control the content, then all you have to do is what Jack did. You pick up the phone and dial 222-8255. That's 904-222-TALK. And we'll talk about whatever it is that you would like to talk about. And if you're just catching us by accident because you're in the car and your station was tuned to this one and you're kind of getting a little intrigued, stick around. We are available on the internet. We're available on your radio, and we're available on our website if you miss any part of the show. Adam always posts the show later on, and he is the kindest person alive for some of you because he strips out the commercials.
Yeah, wasn't that nice?
That's pretty cool. So, when we come back, I think we'll dive right into what happened in the market this week after just a brief mention of keep smiling. And I think there's more good news to come, and there are a couple things it is dependent on, but what a start. In fact, our trivia question is going to go into some of the good news about this year, too. It was Jobs Week, and Jobs Week is always very, very interesting to see how they tie together. There are things that you don't hear in the media about the jobs being created in this country, and we'll enlighten you a little bit on that, too. So if you're getting kind of scared because the market's elevated, as a lot of our clients are and a lot of people we talk to are, we might be able to settle your fears a little bit because it's actually based on reality. But don't go anywhere. We'll be back after a short break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And now, a little bit later than normal, we're going to delve into the market wrap, the job situation, and then I will introduce right after that today's trivia question, which is related to jobs. But as they say, and as I've been saying so often lately, records are made to be broken.
That is true.
And break them we did.
No doubt. And it really just happened on Friday because the rest of the week was not looking that good. But
in fact, it was shocking that we wound up with such a good week.
I was surprised.
It was so blah for 3 days.
Yeah, all three indexes gained over 0.4% on Friday, which was just enough to push the week back into the black for all but the NASDAQ, which ended up just dropping 0.1%.
Rounding error.
Yeah, no, not a big deal. But the other two both increased, and without that little push, we wouldn't have made it. But Friday, the jobs report came out, and the market reacted very positively. So that was nice to see. I love it when the market reacts to economic news instead of the Fed or something like that.
Or it's some stupid news station that can't figure out the difference between a 4 and a 14.
Exactly. So the non-farm payrolls report that came out on Friday, the headline number for November came in at 228,000 jobs created versus an expected 200,000. And the unemployment rate stayed at a very solid 4.1%, which is the lowest it's been in 17 years. The largest areas of job growth were seen in professional and business services, manufacturing, and healthcare, which shouldn't be too surprising.
Those are not minimum wage positions.
No, they're not, which is nice because those and the manufacturing especially is good to see in the top there. That's been on the bottom for years and years. So it's
Stuart Varney pointed out this morning that there are 1,000 manufacturing jobs created in this country every single day now.
Wow, that's amazing.
Isn't it?
Yeah, that is such a trend reversal of the past, who knows, 20 years, maybe even longer.
Longer, I think.
Some positive trends we've seen this year include a decrease of 275,000 long-term unemployed workers. So that number's down from 1.9 million down to 1.6 million. So there still are some long-term unemployed people out there. But
we added 158,000 to the work pool this past month.
The trend is definitely in the right direction. The other one we've seen is that over 850,000 part-time workers got full-time jobs this year. So,
now, as we were saying in the break to each other, that is really important.
Definitely.
Because?
Of those, there's still 4.8 million workers who are part-time but want full-time jobs. So thanks, Obamacare, for that. But it is a trend that is reversing, and hopefully that will continue.
Mandate might go away.
And all those people, not only do they make more money because they're working more hours, but they tend to get benefits as well, which is another huge benefit of that trend.
And the economists will call it disposable personal income, which means discretionary things, which means you get to buy new toys.
Exactly.
Yay.
And that spurs the economy. So it's a virtuous cycle and one we really like to see. The only negative about the report was, once again, the disappointing wage growth. In November, average hourly earnings increased by 5 cents, bringing the annual increase to 64 cents, which sounds okay until you realize that that represents only a 2.5% increase in wages, which is better than it has been, but still not at a level that it should be considering how good the job market is right now.
Yes, and if you remember frequently through the past shows, we've been admonishing people that if they're not totally satisfied in their jobs, whether it's for the job itself, the hours, or the pay, this is a great time to go seek a new job and demand more. If you want your hourly income or annual income or whatever to go up, look around. There are jobs out there open and
definitely
waiting.
And another piece of good news, if you had a job this past week, you probably didn't get fired. The weekly jobless claims came in at 236,000, which was slightly below last week and well below the important 300,000 mark for the who knows how many weeks in a row. It's just been an incredible run that we've been on. Oil prices ended the week essentially flat, but are still up over 18% in the last 3 months. For the year, they are down just slightly, but the trend is up in recent months. For the year, gold is still up over 8%.
Although it's on sale again right now.
Yeah, the trend has been pretty negative recently. And speaking of that, silver is down 1% on the year, but down almost 7% in the last month. Really makes you wonder if all that money is just pouring into Bitcoin instead of into other
commodities. I think right now it is, because it's the same kind of speculative money. If you were even inclined to think about buying some gold and silver, we like to buy it electronically, of course. But it is really getting inexpensive right at the moment. Might be something to look at if you're an investor that can tolerate some risk.
And I was talking about Bitcoin earlier, and I'm going to talk about it again later. But it was another pretty wild ride this week for the cryptocurrency. The price of the digital coins hit over $17,000 this week before crashing back to the $15,800 range. So, yeah, I hope you didn't try and get in at the 17,000 level, because that one could have hurt.
There's got to be people out there that look at numbers like that and say, gosh, I think I'm too late. I'll just wait.
You would think so, but I said that last week, too.
And, I know.
Yeah.
I remember when it hit 10,000. Gosh, that was hours ago.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just nuts,
people. It is crazy.
But, you know, it is what it is. And if you're in it already, start looking at pulling some profits out and work on the house dime for a while, I think. Let's see. Our trivia question has to do with jobs. It's brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm, 636-7888. And the question is, the jobs numbers that are reported all the time are reported by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and they are what is known as seasonally adjusted numbers, meaning there are certain times of the year when people routinely get hired and routinely lose their jobs in other seasons of the year. So what they do in order to make a comparison to normal, quote normal, is they seasonally adjust the data. But I like to dig under some of these numbers that you see and find out what's really going on. So they also publish a non-seasonally adjusted jobs report. And all that means is that these are the people they actually count before the statisticians of the country put their heads together and modify them either up or down based on the season. So my question is, how many people actually have gone to work since the inauguration, meaning February 1 till yesterday? What is the number of people? And I will take it within about 300,000, which makes it a pretty big number, as you might guess. So the question is, how many actual people have gone to work since the inauguration? And I think you'll be very impressed.
Yeah, it's a big number.
It is. So next series of topics. Adam's going to do some things on the Bitcoin today. I want to talk about the few days and weeks that are left this year and the tax planning that we always do at year end. Some things can wait until after year end. Some things can't. But this year, we have some other considerations, because there are various levels of tax proposals out there. Some things are virtually a slam dunk. Some things are probable. Some would go down to maybe likely, and others are being talked about. What should you do? What should you plan on in uncertain times when you know for sure one thing is the most likely to happen, and that's change? But you don't react to change. You react to what change you expect. So there are some things that we can do right now that are doable at all years, under all circumstances. There are other things that we might want to really consider. And some of it might be kind of fun for you, because one of the things that I'm going to recommend is, if you are in the market for a new car, a new boat, an RV, or any major purchase like that, you might want to buy it this year, because you will get a sales tax deduction that I will not promise you very much in life, but I'll promise you the chances of you not getting that deduction next year are very, very high.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's not a bad strategy. If you were already going to purchase it,
yes,
I would think about moving that forward.
Now, there is a second side to that that came up in the office this week, too, and you're kind of tossing a coin on this one. What's going to happen to the price of cars, the price of boats, the price of recreational vehicles and that sort of thing, when people don't get a deduction on the sales tax? Will it impact sales? Will it impact prices? Are you going to bet on getting a better deal next year? Are you going to bet on getting a tax deduction this year? And I always kind of like the bird in the hand theory, personally.
I do too, and I also think that that applies a lot more to the higher end items, because people that have tax concerns like that are probably buying much pricier goods than.
Yeah, we're not talking about a Boston Whaler when we're talking about a boat that it really makes a difference for the taxes.
Exactly.
It could be considerable and number of digits on it.
Buying a $25,000 car versus maybe a $100,000 or $150,000 car, it's a big difference.
And it's not hard to look around and find cars that go from 60 on up these days.
No.
In fact, it might be a better trick to find one that doesn't start that high.
Seriously.
Going new anyway. So there are things like that that we all can look at, and if it fits into your plans, that's good. There's another aspect right now, too. The interest rates are very conducive, and you know what's going to happen toward the last few days of the year. If you're on a car dealer's lot or a boat dealer's lot, you're going to have some serious attention paid to you, because they've got to get their quotas in for their bonuses next year, and time's a-wasting. Only got about 2.5 weeks or 3 weeks, something like that. And then, of course, there's things like buying Christmas presents. If you are that kind, that you're very generous, you might want to look into capturing some sales tax deductions on that sort of thing. So there are things that we can all do. There are things we can think about. And there's some other things you might not think about. And we'll get into that a little later in the show. So when we get back, Adam's going to tell you a little bit more about not only cryptocurrencies and not only Bitcoin, but the technology that drives this. And even though we don't know who it is, we might know what it is. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Van Wee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And lines are open, 904-222-8255. This segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. You are going to need someone when all this water turns into a little sunshine and green grass. So give Troy a call, 662-9794. Trivia question still out there. On a non-seasonally adjusted basis, how many people have gone to work in this country since inauguration? Actually, since February 1, which is just kind of a little rounding error anyway. So how many? And it's close enough to about 250, 300,000, one way or the other, we will call you the winner. All right, cryptocurrency, sort of the word of the year, I guess. In fact, if I had to pick a person of the year, I'd probably pick Bitcoin. Wait, is that a person? I don't think so.
No, and they're not even sure that the founder is a person. So
yeah, maybe it was created by artificial intelligence.
No, I don't. I think it might have been a group, but it's very interesting.
I think Hal's been working on it since 2000.
Maybe.
All right. So tell us some things we don't know, and I'll try to ask some questions about things that we'd like to know.
Okay. I'll do my best. We'll see. And again, if there's anyone out there who is more familiar with this technology than me, please call in and let us know. It would be great to hear from you. I'm just learning about it now, trying to impart my very little bit of knowledge on you, but I really don't know that much. It's all very complicated.
I ignored it in hopes it would go away, but that did not prove to be a very good strategy.
Actually, the opposite. So blockchain is the technology that supports Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. Prior to blockchain, there was no record of transactions between random, untrusting parties without using a third party like a bank, without the risk of fraud or theft. So the problem that they were trying to solve with this was a way for people to engage in commerce with each other with an untrusted party without having an intermediary. So think about when you buy land and you put money into escrow and then the bank distributes that once the deal is done. That is the traditional way that these things are handled. With the blockchain, what it allows it to do is eliminate the bank, and that money can pass directly to the other party, and there's no real fear of them ripping you off. So this is the problem that they were set out to solve, and I think they did a pretty good job, actually. It's interesting. So what blockchain does is allows a public, decentralized digital ledger of transactions to exist without that third-party administrator. So you can always go back and look at what happened, see it, and there's records that are publicly available to verify all these transactions. And before, that was the responsibility of a bank or some other regulatory board. The background of this technology is almost as mysterious and exciting as the technology itself. According to Bitcoin legend, a mysterious person or group called Satoshi Nakamoto developed the blockchain technology in 2008 and then applied it to Bitcoin the following year. I'm not sure that this story is the reason for the world's fascination with Bitcoin, but it certainly didn't hurt. What self-prescribed geek doesn't love a good story about a Japanese hacker cloaked in secrecy? It sounds kind of like a movie script, and I'm pretty sure it will be one someday. I really would love to tell you I understand exactly how blockchain works, but I would be completely lying. But I do know that it uses a peer-to-peer network and a distributed time-stamping server to allow the database to be managed autonomously. Because the transaction information is agreed upon and recorded across many independent computers, verifying transactions and auditing them is actually very easy. This also adds security, as the data is not kept in one central repository that can be hacked. So let's say a computer storing blockchain data is hacked and the information is stolen. Essentially, the data cannot be forged or used in any other way because the copies of the original data exist on thousands of other computers. If the hacker were then to introduce the forged data into the network, the other computers would reject it because it doesn't match their consensus data. In short, there's no official copy of the data because every computer has the same data. The security is in the consensus between the thousands of anonymous users. Many people consider blockchain technology to be unhackable due to the open, distributed nature of the data. This technology is really in its early stages. Many individual companies are working to apply this to a variety of different applications. The financial industry is working to use it to facilitate faster settlement systems when transferring money. Governments are interested in applying it to online voting systems, land ownership records, and even personal identification of its citizens. In 2017, the first international property transaction was completed using blockchain technology. The healthcare industry wants to use it for medical records. The music industry is looking into collecting royalties for digital music through it. Ernst & Young, one of the four big accounting firms, accepts Bitcoin payments for their services. While the technology is exciting, there are several downsides to it. For blockchain technology to work, thousands of computers have to hold on to the same database. This is, as you can imagine, not very efficient. In many ways, this is the exact opposite of what the trend has been going to the cloud. So recently, everything is moving to the cloud. You don't ever install software on a CD on your computer anymore. You just log into the internet and you can access a centralized database, and millions of people can do it at the same time, and therefore all that data is updated in real time and you can access it. Well, this is the opposite. It actually pushes everything out to thousands of computers, so you can imagine how much less efficient that is. But that's what makes it so unhackable. If that central database gets hacked, the information is stolen and it's gone. If you hack one computer on a blockchain network, that's just one computer, and you can't corrupt the rest of the network. So it's what makes it secure also makes it inefficient. The other downside to the digital currency is that while blockchain is considered hack-proof, the companies that hold the digital wallets where Bitcoin is stored and the digital mining companies are not. For instance, this week, the digital mining company NiceHash, which is apparently one of the bigger ones, was hacked, and about $80 million worth of Bitcoin was stolen. Multiple reports said that an employee's computer was compromised through an elaborate social engineering scheme. Several exchanges have been hacked in the last couple of years, causing between $5 and $31 million in losses per event. There have been several other glitches reported that caused owners to be unable to trade their currencies for a period of time, which is dangerous when the currency you're holding can move several thousand dollars in a matter of minutes or hours. So after doing this research, I find it pretty clear that the future isn't necessarily Bitcoin. Bitcoin could very well be around to stay, or it could be a flash in the pan, and it could be replaced by a newer, better digital currency. However, the technology behind it, the blockchain, is really exciting to me as a potential investment. Securing digital information is already a multi-billion dollar business, and there are many people that feel that blockchain is the future of that industry. So that, to me, seems more like the investment opportunity.
There's a guy with a very famous name, Steve. The other name, Mnuchin.
Okay.
Remember him?
Mm-hmm.
I read an article about him this morning. He is now, he's the head of the Treasury Department, which controls IRS and other things. And he is on a mission right now to identify transactions that have occurred with Bitcoin that should be taxable to the IRS and haven't been paid.
Right.
In their viewpoint, that is essentially money laundering.
And I could see why they would say that.
Yes, and there is an absolutely simple fix for it.
What's that?
Fair tax.
True.
Who cares tax? The fair tax. It's, who cares? So you buy something from somebody, you barter it, swap it, buy it with money, buy it with Bitcoin, doesn't matter. But since that's not going to happen this year or next year, then what's going to happen, this is my question to me and you and everybody else, it's kind of a rhetorical question, but not exactly. What's going to happen when IRS starts digging in to the Bitcoin transactions that are worth, the number he put on it was about $20,000 and up, and you can imagine there's probably some very, very big transactions that have happened with Bitcoin. How are they going to dig into this? And who's going to get a tax bill that they weren't expecting? That is something that worries me about using the thing in general. The other question I have, that wasn't really a question, if I wanted some Bitcoin, where do I get it?
Well, there are a lot of different exchanges that you can use to purchase Bitcoin.
And with dollars?
Yes,
exactly. I'll give you previously earned dollars for some unspent Bitcoin.
Yeah, one of the other interesting things I saw was that Ernst & Young in their Switzerland office actually has a Bitcoin ATM. Go figure.
You know, I feel kind of stupid. Like I don't even know what question to ask about that.
Exactly.
All right, well, more when we get back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the trivia question is still out there. How many people have actually gone to work since the inauguration? And it is a very healthy number. Now, a couple of little things, just cleaning up my stack of stuff here. The Department of Labor, the Republicans, and the Republican administration have done it again, folks. They have delayed the implementation of the fiduciary rule for another 18 months. Why should anybody care? Well, let me tell you why. If you are dealing with a financial advisor, you should ask some questions. And among those questions would be, how do you get paid? What do you get paid? Do you have to serve in a capacity when dealing with me as a fiduciary? Meaning that in all decisions, you have to place my interests ahead of your own. And if you don't get a very clear, concise yes on that one, I suggest you close your book, you get up from the table, and you walk out the door. This standard, the fiduciary standard, which requires that kind of care and diligence in dealing with people who are potential clients or customers, you know the difference between a client and a customer? That's called the fiduciary rule. This is supposed to be spreading far and wide, and you've heard me say this before, but if you haven't, you're going to be surprised. Elizabeth Warren got this one right, and I agree with her. That's one for, what, 10,000?
Pretty much.
Yeah. But she got it introduced along with Obama. I'll even give him credit where credit is due, and it Absolutely. Is due on this one. They recognized what I consider to be a very simple concept, that getting good advice is better than getting bad advice, and getting no advice is still better than getting bad advice. The Republican argument, with which I categorically disagree, says that, in a sense, they won't use the word, but in a sense, it's saying that if you get bad advice from a non-fiduciary advisor, it's better than not getting any advice at all.
Because you paid so much less for it.
Yes. Now,
wait, what?
That does not cut it in Steve's book of logic. And I'm pretty sure it doesn't cut it in Adam's book of logic.
No.
So why are they doing this? Well, you know what the rule is called that makes not everyone in the business become a fiduciary? It is referred to in the business as the Merrill Lynch rule. Now, I'm not picking on them. That's the name of the thing. But what it says is the major brokerage houses are the ones standing in the way of the implementation of this rule because they make so much of their money on commissions. And they wrap the commissions into a wrap fee in hopes that you, the people, will not recognize what's happening. And that is that you are paying commissions under the guise of a fee. That is why it is critically important for everybody out there to understand the term fee only. When you hear fee-based, you cannot assume that's what they mean. In fact, you should assume that's exactly opposite of what they mean. Fee only. If you would like to find a fee-only advisor to work with, there's a couple of easy ways to do it. The easiest way is to pick up the phone and call Van Wee Financial.
That is an easy way to do it.
Because we are, always have been, and always will be fee only. You can also look at the website for the CFP board or the website for NAPFA, which is the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors. In order to be a member of NAPFA, you have to be, not just say, be fee only. Remember, fee only, except no substitutes. Speaking of the easy way, calling us, why don't you slip in a little bit of here about how to contact us?
Sure.
Just in case.
Yeah, if you do want to call us.
Don't call us to buy Bitcoin.
No.
Any other reason.
If you do want to call us, our office number is 904-685-1505. And that's always on our website, which is vanweefinancial.com. If you are trying to find us and can't spell Van Wee, you're not alone. No one ever can. It's actually VANWIE or Victor Alpha November Whiskey India Echo. So that is the easiest way to find us. On our website, you'll see lots of interesting stuff. We do a blog. We put up at least one story a week about sometimes about things that we talk about on the radio, sometimes other topics. And we also post our weekly podcast, which Steve mentioned earlier. It's commercial free. It's also available on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts. So find us there.
Yep. Okay. What can we do about our taxes this year? Well, we all know or should know. If you don't, then you're already learning something today. You can deposit money into your traditional or Roth IRA, but only one of those impacts your taxes. That's the traditional. Up to your date of filing, April 15th, or sometimes it's 16 or 17, depending on the calendar, but right up to the April 15th deadline, you can make that deposit retroactive to this year. So if you want to save some money this year and you're a little low on cash, so you're unable to make that deposit, you can wait until next year, up through your filing date, to make that deposit and take credit on your this year's taxes. So that's a wonderful thing. Now, if you want to do a Roth or a regular and do it retroactively, know one thing. Long run, you're going to have less money. When is the right time to do an IRA deposit? January 2nd. Get that money working for you, and you'll have an extra, on average, about 13 or 14 months. But if you can't do that, know that you can still influence your tax bill for this year. But those opportunities are pretty rare. Let's talk about your 401k, TSP, any of those things. You cannot wait until April 15th to make your personal deposits into those plans because they are required to be done through payroll withholding. And that means it has to be a payroll in the calendar year to which it applies. So if you are not maxed out yet and you would like to do some further tax saving for this year, you might have to contact your HR department and say, look, I want to bump up my contribution level through the end of this year. I've seen people just skip their last paycheck and put it all in there. Some people are past the Social Security limit, so they got a little better cash flow in their paycheck, so they put it in there. You can do anything you want to as long as you get there in time to get it done prior to December 31st. And that can help you save a lot of money on the current year taxes. Now, let's talk about investors. We've had a couple of these situations lately, too. What can we do to impact our taxes? Well, let's say you have loss carryforwards, and this has been a really good year for your investments, and you want to use up some of those loss carryforwards due to tax uncertainty or whatever, and you wouldn't mind pulling some profits out of the market because, heck, who knows? Well, then you can sell some gains and offset prior year's losses. How do you know if you have prior year's losses? Read your tax return from last year. It will be on there. It's called tax loss carryforward. The common misconception is that there is a $3,000 limit as to the deductibility of your losses every year. That is categorically wrong. 100% of your gains are able to be offset this year by your previous losses plus $3,000 every year. So if you're sitting out there on $40,000 or $50,000 of losses and you got some really skyrocketing QQQs or S&P 500 funds or something like that, and you want to pull a little profit out of there and get those old credits used up, consider selling. Again, calendar year. It's the date of the actual sale that determines what year it will be applied to on your taxes. What if you are considering a Roth IRA conversion? Maybe you're thinking about it this year, next year. Maybe you're doing a series of them. Well, there is a proposal out there that would change the best feature of the Roth conversion, that being the term recharacterization. When you convert money from a traditional to a Roth, it is taxable as ordinary income at marginal tax rates this year. But if you start doing your taxes and say, oh my gosh, I bumped me into a new bracket, I don't want to pay that much, so I wish I hadn't done it. Well, guess what? You can undo it now. There is another proposal, and this one is just the worst possible idea, and I'd like to get hold of the person who thought it up. They're thinking of taking away that recharacterization. I don't think they will. I'll put that right up front. But they're talking about it. It's in one of the proposals. Therefore, an intelligent person would say, if you're going to do a Roth conversion, do it this year, knowing full well you can undo it next year. This time, and hopefully it'll be good from there on in. I got some more for next week, but start thinking. It is just, by then it'll be, what, the 16th of December. Since Inauguration Day, 5,234,000 people have actually gone to work in this country. Thank you, Mr. President. See you next week. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.